If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today, I have Megan Kane. She is the author of Party of One, Be Your Own Best Partner. She is also the supervising editor of NPR's Life Kit podcast, which is so cool. We are talking about her book today, and we're talking about how to be your own best partner. And we start off by talking about it doesn't have to be this either or thing of you enjoy being single or you want a relationship. Both can coexist at the same time. And she really wrote this book in that perspective. So we talk about how society has really built up this idea of relationships are the most important. And if you're not in a relationship, you're somehow behind or pathetic or whatever that looks like. We talk about the biggest fears around being single and how to rewrite the story you're telling yourself about singleness. We talk about how to become more comfortable in your own skin on your own and what that looks like. And she gives some really specific techniques on how to start enjoying your time on your own. And we talk about the importance of building other connections and how that's not just important for, you know, not just looking at being single as being in a waiting room. So not just, you know, being okay waiting around, but also like building a really fulfilling life on your own and with the other people in your life. So whether or not a partner comes in, you're happy and you're fulfilled. And that's so freeing and how much power that brings. So I hope everyone enjoys this episode and goes out and gets Megan's book, Party of One, Be Your Own Best Partner, wherever books are sold. Welcome, Megan Kane, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very excited to have you on and to talk about your book.
Thanks for having me.
So can we start by, I would love to hear some background as to what led you to write this book and, you know, your history and being the editor of a podcast and producer and all of that. So I would love to hear a little bit of your story.
Sure. So it starts with a breakup and then another breakup, actually, fitting enough for this podcast. I was the kind of person who, I even hate saying the term late bloomer because like everyone goes at their own speed, right? But I had a lot of hangups about not having an official partner in my life. I never had like a you're my boyfriend, I'm your girlfriend type relationship till I was about 26. Some people might think that's late. Some people might think that's still young, you know? And I got into this relationship when I was about 26 and it moved really quickly. And we felt like very enmeshed very quickly. And he said, I love you very fast. I said it back. And I was like, okay, great. Wow, this is really happening. And as a result, I wasn't asking a lot of deep questions about the relationship. Because I was so nervous about tipping over this thing and that I had waited so long to experience that I was treating it as a very fragile relationship when really I just thought, well, do I actually like being in this relationship? Like, what values do we have that are similar? Do we want the same kind of life? And I went on vacation about 6 months in with my family. I came back, called him on the way home, and we were no longer together by the time I got back to my apartment. He had done some thinking, wasn't right for him. I was blindsided. in retrospect, many years later, maybe I shouldn't have been blindsided if I was, you know, wasn't as concerned about, you know, is this, I shouldn't actually be my real self around this person. I need to protect this because I finally got here. But yeah, instead I was ignoring all that. And so maybe I could have seen it coming. I was pretty heartbroken and like, you know, I know everyone gets upset after a breakup, but I was like, ooh, I feel like I am like in a complicated grief stage. Like I really couldn't move past. And then about a year later, I met someone else and kind of a similar pattern happened where I was blindsided at the breakup. And I was like, man, these back-to-back breakups are really kicking my butt. And both of these people met their long-term partners right after me, like weeks within. And so that, you know, gave me a complex. And so I started to think over the years, like, okay, what are the tools that I actually need to be not just like secure in singleness, but just even in my own skin if I do want to enter a relationship? And I had a feeling that these would be skills that, you know, everyone could benefit from. And shortly after that second breakup, I got asked at NPR to start Life Kit, which is NPR's, you know, how to service journals and podcasts. So I, after a few years now, I was like, okay, well, I know my way around the self-help world now. And so I thought, okay, are there other people out there that have to be, you know, knowing that singleness and living a life with or without a partner is awesome and great. It shouldn't determine your worth, but sometimes we still get hung up on these societal messages. So how do we kind of connect our brains and our hearts to live a really fulfilling life, no matter what romantic partner is in our life or not?
Yes. First, I thought you said backpack breakups. And I was like, this back to back, I was like, that's a good term for it. But a lot of people go through,
I mean,
these,
he
like,
was packing a backpack to leave, I guess. So
the back to back breakups can be such a butt kicker. And I know a lot of people that, and it's like, you don't even have time to process one. And then you're kind of hit with another one.
Yeah.
But I love the message of your book. And I think it's so important. And I think particularly people who are listening to this podcast, who are coming out of a breakup, this is such a great time, obviously, to work through some of this stuff. And I also like the book is broken down into, first of all, like, why do we believe we need to have a partner so bad? And right, how is our society set up not only to make us believe that we need a partner, but also make it really hard to then find a partner and totally, then kind of leave us high and dry when that partnership doesn't work out. So I think that's like a good place to start. But before we, you know, kind of dive into the book, playing devil's advocate here, I know a lot of people who, you know, they might hear this topic and they think, okay, does it have to be either or? Do I have to like pick a life where I enjoy being single and then let go of wanting a relationship, you know? Totally. So can both things coexist at the same time, basically? Can you enjoy being single and hope to be in a relationship?
I mean, that was me. That was the audience that I was writing for. And because I was first writing and reporting on this for Life Kit. And what I was really important to me for that episode and then the book was that I knew that there were people who identify as what Bella DiPaolo, this researcher, calls being single at heart. They kind of know in their heart that being single is the best path forward for them. They don't really want a romantic partner necessarily, but they find all this rich relationships and all these other ways. And they're not really desiring a romantic partner. But then I also knew there was people who were like, I only want a partner. This is the only way to be. And I was like, I kind of fit in the middle somewhere on this spectrum, which is exactly what you're talking about. This idea that like, maybe this partner thing is not happening for me right now. And I do want one and leave the door open for one, but I also can't make that the main focus of my daily life, or else I will drive myself up a wall and feel really hopeless and sad inside. And so the techniques in the book are really aimed to help you kind of turn down the volume of, I need to find the partner. Like, so it's not just like your every waking thought or idea, or leaving a date that maybe doesn't go well. You don't even like the person, right? Maybe. And then you're like, God, I'm never going to find someone. And you're just already at the bottom of the well, right? So it's like, okay, like, how can we, you know, regulate emotions? Think about how we talk to ourselves and our patterns of rumination, that these things that kind of fuel the fire along with the societal messaging paired together. And how can we, you know, make our heads and our hearts kind of a safer place to live so that when that negative messaging comes in, you're better able to combat it?
Yes, I think that's great. I like, I love that turning down the volume of I need a relationship, I need a relationship. And you start off the book talking about, you call it the haze. but like, and I'm curious now if you can look back at those, you know, relationships that didn't work out. You talk about having like ugly confidence being in a relationship of like, okay, I got the relationship. Nothing else matters. And you don't pay attention. Can you talk a little bit about that concept of ugly confidence? Because I think a lot of people coming out of a breakup might look at that and be like, oh, yeah, I definitely had that.
Yeah, because we're conditioned to just get to the relationship. And then there's not a lot of education or, you know, Disney movies about what happens after that, right? We don't always have like a script that we're given. And, you know, I know there's plenty of self-help industry out there about relationships and marriage, but you're not really talked to about how to think about, okay, now you're in the relationship. What do you actually want, right? It's a lot of like, well, when you get married or when you have a partner or when you start your life this way, like it's just seen as this like adult coronation. And so of course you want it or think you might want it, right? And so, yeah, the ugly confidence idea was me reflecting on that first like kind of big relationship where I kind of felt like I was on the other side finally of, you know, of couplehood and like what it meant and like this kind of status. And I realized that I kind of relished that in that particular relationship for all the wrong reasons, right? Again, I was thinking it's so wonderful that I can hold this partner's hand or like show up as a couple to a party, but I wasn't thinking deeply about my values and his values and how they aligned. Were there things in the relationship that just weren't going to work? And that was fine. It wasn't any reflection on my self-worth, on him as a person. We just didn't match like long-term, and that's fine. But afterwards, I did develop this like kind of this complex that I was like the rebound girl because, you know, I was like, oh, well, he found someone right after me. And then this next boyfriend found someone after me weeks after again. And so I realized, okay, if I'm so concerned about kind of crossing this threshold about into coupledom, it always means that when you don't have it, then you are somehow a failure, right? By being single. And that's, I knew that wasn't true, but I was feeling that way. And so, yeah, the ugly confidence was something that I was like, oh, okay, I should like to hold a partner's hand because I just love them and I feel good about our relationship, not because it makes me look good, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was just what I was told to think about what makes, you know, you made it to that line over that line to get the guy, get the relationship, but not a lot of analysis on, is that a quality relationship?
That's so true. And I feel like that, you know, quote unquote confidence that comes from being in a relationship, it also can make going through a breakup or being single feel worse because you're like, oh, I know how I felt. You know, if you haven't like changed your perspective of not having that confidence, it can feel like, oh, they're better than me, that they're in that relationship. They're looking at me because I'm by myself instead of realizing that no one thinks that way. But when you're in that and you believe that, then it really feels like everyone's looking at me because I'm here by myself. I don't have a date to this function. I'm at a wedding by myself or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, we're really good at telling negative stories to ourselves and then really believing them and locking in when, you know, a lot of mindfulness techniques that I write about in the book are a lot about taking a pause, like doing a little emotional fact checking and thinking, is that actually true? Like what's happening here? And then just divorcing the shame from what the feeling is. Maybe you do feel sad because you don't have a partner while you're out, you know, at a holiday party or what have you. But instead of being like, God, I'm bad, you can then think to yourself, I just feel sad right now, and just only experience the emotion rather than layering on all the extra stuff that comes with that, that makes you feel even worse.
Yeah. I feel like that's been something I've learned a lot this last year with hosting the podcast is just how much shame is associated with going through a breakup, even if it wasn't your fault at all, if it was just something that happened to you, it does feel like I must have done something wrong. And you use the example of like the human chutes and ladders game of like, okay, if you're in a relationship, like you're going up the ladder, if you're going through a breakup or if you're single, like you have somehow downgraded in life and you need like,
you're back to square one.
Yeah. You got to get back up the ladder, where if we look at the trajectory of someone's relationship history, it's like there are a lot of people who get out of a relationship and they end up in a much better relationship. There was no going down at all. Like, it was all going up. And so many people who get out of a relationship and then can enjoy being single, that's a huge upgrade to being in a bad relationship, or you talk about a lot, like a relationship where you feel alone in it.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I read Sarah Eckel, this journalist who wrote this great book called It's Not You, 27 Wrong Reasons You're Single. And she basically takes every myth one at a time about why people think they're single or being told that they're single. And kind of like the big message of the book is, what if instead there's all the reasons why you're quote unquote single are actually good reasons and positive reasons, that you're like protecting yourself or, you know, not settling. And, you know, instead of seeing as a negative, thinking of the reason you are single right now is either just a neutral to a positive one. Like, maybe you're single because you have other things you want to think about or, you know, improve on, or you see what's out there and you're like, you know, I'm good for right now. And those are positive reasons. And we don't give single women in particular that consideration or accolades for staying single when it's can be either one, dangerous, or two, unsatisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel like there's some, and you could probably speak to this more, but I do feel like we're changing a little bit as a society. I just think about like how my mom talks about people. Mm-hmm. Like if I have a friend that's single, she's like, do you think so-and-so is ever going to find someone? Like, what do you think it is that's preventing them from finding mm-hmm. someone? And I'm like, oh, nothing. I don't know. But I don't really hear that with my friends, you know, when like, mm-hmm. if we have a friend that's single, we're not consumed with, oh my God, I hope they find someone. I wonder what's wrong. Let's try to set them up. Let's try to work through this. So I do think there is some narrative changing, I guess, in the bigger scope, but it definitely still is. Like, I got a question yesterday in a Q&A I was doing of how to deal with your ex finding someone before you. And it's like, mm-hmm. why is it a competition? But it is, you know, I mean,
I know
it's not, but it feels like it. It feels like whoever is in a new relationship first wins. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what you win.
Right. I mean, maybe it's like they're pursuing a relationship that you actually have no interest in, right? You know, like that they have a setup or they have a way of being together that has no interest to you, but you have no idea because you just see the pictures on Instagram. Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of people do treat singleness as a problem to be solved, right? Like you're talking about, you know, when people are like, oh, are they going to meet someone? Like, let's set them up. You know, it's some people just aren't interested in that. I mean, and there's like a spectrum right there. I know there's single people who are like, my married friends never volunteer to set me up or whatever. So I would just say in those circumstances, like speak up for what you want. Just like the answer is usually just communicate whether you want something or don't want something. Right. And then in terms of like, is that narrative changing? I think it is in certain places, but you know what, in writing this book and talking about it, I have been kind of, it's really interesting to see where that narrative of like, oh, but that's so sad that they haven't met someone yet. Like I hear that still. Like I recently heard from someone who said they gifted my book to someone, a single friend of theirs, and everyone else at this dinner party was like, whoa, that's offensive. Like, and they were like, what do you mean? Like they're single, I'm single. Like this book is also just about like being okay with yourself in general. So yeah, there's still like this funny stigma about what it means to be single. Because I think sometimes too, when people are in relationships and they have that attitude, I think it just tells me more about them and how they think about themselves and their relationship that rather than the single person, right?
Yeah. And to me, it would show that someone is deriving a large part of their worth and confidence from their relationship. So if they picture themselves not in a relationship, it's like, okay, everything would have fallen apart.
Yeah, exactly.
And you talk about that too in your experience of giving the power to the other person. If you really like are driving so much, you're giving them so much power and it's always going to feel like you're on uneven ground within the relationship, which I think is something that a lot of people go through. When you're so scared of a breakup happening, when you're so scared of not having this person, you're not on an equal playing field because you don't want to quote unquote mess up or you don't want to upset them because then you're at the risk of losing the relationship.
Yeah. And then you just don't get to also be yourself in that relationship, right? Like you don't actually get to see how they, you know, react to you, I don't know, like your true sense of humor or, you know, what your preferences are about anything, right? Because once you get past the honeymoon stage and, you know, introducing friends and family, it's like things get more complicated automatically, right? And yeah. And it's hard to fake something like that for that long. And so the charade will come apart at some point, I think. So I guess in a way for me, it was kind of a blessing that both of those relationships where I felt like I was, you know, walking on eggshells fell apart pretty quickly. At the time, I felt like, oh God, it's a huge failure. But, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, well, thank God I wasn't in that relationship for 5 years, like, or even just a year, you know?
Because then it would have ended. And
right,
then you
which
would
is
have
also
been,
fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you would have been lost kind of finding yourself again after that period of time of like, okay, who even am I anymore if I've put up this charade for 5 years or whatever? So when we talk about kind of rewriting the narrative that we have about being single, from all the talking you've done, what are some of the biggest fears that people have around being single? Like, what are the biggest stories people are telling themselves?
Well, the biggest, you know, and classic one, right, is I'm going to die alone, right? And not to be morbid, but like, there's no guarantee people who are married die alone. Like, you cannot control how that's going to happen, right? For the most part. And so I've also heard from people who say, like, the single people who are really intentional about building community, when they're at death's doorstep and say hospice or something, they have the most people coming to say goodbye to them, not always the married people. Like, and also having kids as somewhat insurance plan to make sure that you're taken care of when you're older, right? Like, also not a guarantee. You have no idea what kind of children your kids will grow up to be and what relationship you're going to have with them, what the circumstances are going to be. So if we can all just accept that it's just a gamble, how that's going to end up alone. I think what they really mean is like, you know, like die alone is basically a euphemism for just like, I'm just not going to have someone around or I'm going to be lonely for a long time, right? And so what I've been finding too is like the research shows that single people have more connections often than married people, right? Because again, single people have to think about meeting people outside their own home, especially if you live alone, right? Like, you have to think about a diversity of connections. And that is something that single people really know how to do well. And I think it's something that married people and people in relationships should also take a page out of, right? Where it's like, yes, it's wonderful to have friendship with your partner, but having relationships and friendships outside that partnership, having alone time, those make for great relationships, right? That bolsters what you have as in that connection. And then, yeah, so loneliness, that's a big one. That you're somehow like sad or pathetic is like a big one, right? And like that I never understood too, because it's so frustrating because society tells us you need to want to get married. And then as soon as you're like, you know, okay, I do want a partnership, but it's just not happening right now. Society turns back on you and says, oh God, you're pathetic. It's like, you told me I want this in the first place. Like, it was always like a bind to begin with, right? So it just feels like this automatic pass fail, right? If you're married, you're in. And if you're not, you know, it's somehow a failure, right? And so I think what has been really enriching about the book for me is seeing how unplugging from like the matrix of like, this is the automatic path, the famous relationship escalator, right? You meet someone, you move in, you get married, you have kids. Even if that's how your life goes, how my life goes, I think it's good to actually come to yourself and think, do I actually want any of this? Like, what are my values? Does this reflect my values? And then you might find, hey, actually, I do want partnership, but like, I also want to just feel like really connected, right? And like connection can come in a lot of different ways through community, showing up for and making, I don't know, groups where you're making art together or what have you. You know, there's all these different ways. Like, so once you start to see that marriage and partnership isn't the only way to achieve some of your goals or express your values, you start to see a more flexible life. And then I think that is very protective, not even well, protective, but I think more kind to everyone. Because I think it's a shame to see when people get into relationships and feel like they can't leave them because they're just so scared of being single and what that would mean, right? And so this like fear of, and like scariness around singleness, it impacts everybody.
I'm sure it won't surprise anyone to hear that only about 8% of people stick with their New Year's resolutions. I know in the past I've made it the goal to meditate every day, work out 4 times a week, stop ordering takeout, but those have never seemed to last. What if there was a way to make a resolution automatic?
While Acorns can't help with the gym, they can make saving and investing money automatic in just 5 short minutes. With everything else you have going on with your breakup, take saving money off your plate and start the year with Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. And you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. Financial stress has always been one of my biggest stress points, and it's a habit I've had a hard time sticking with. I love that Acorns can take that off my hands where I don't even have to think about it. Head to acorns.com/heartbreak or download the Acorns app today to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risks. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorn.com/heartbreak. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes in addition to your breakup overwhelm? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. And these hormone disruptors are on top of the natural hormone changes we go through. And even though it is a natural process, it doesn't mean it doesn't wreak havoc on us. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore. Thanks to Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal changes in women of all ages. I love that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms, menopause symptoms, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, that's very true because it impacts people who are in relationships. They don't want to lose it because it's like so scary to be single. And then if you're single, you feel like, oh my God, I'm seen as pathetic. So I need to hurry up and find right. somebody. So I agree. And it takes the pressure off. And you know what's interesting too is I feel like on like TikTok and Instagram and stuff, I've been seeing these posts about how like three old women like who are best friends all move in together. And
I love
and
it.
Everyone's like, that looks so fun. You know, everyone's mm-hmm. like, that looks so good. But then it's like, oh, but I'm single and I still feel pathetic, even though I see it outside of myself. And I'm like, that looks so fun and fulfilling. It's very funny, the disconnect. And you said that, like connecting the head and the heart. So how do people start changing that narrative within themselves? Because it might look fine for someone else, but how do we connect it to, oh, this feels good for me?
Yeah. So for starting at kind of like square one, right? Where mm-hmm. you're like, I'm feeling a lot of resistance around singleness, right? Let's say that's the situation. I wrote a lot about dialectical behavior therapy techniques in the book. And DBT, as it's known, is basically a school of thought in psychology about accepting really hard emotions and dealing with hard things. And something I love from DBT is this idea of radical acceptance, which is when you notice that frustration or that resistance to, say, being single, you can use radical acceptance, which is a simple, it's basically a mindfulness technique where you stop and you say to yourself, like, I notice I'm resisting. I notice I'm feeling frustration. And just reminding yourself, like, things are exactly how they are right now. That's like an iteration of it. It's not saying I am happy with it, what's happening right now, and it's not an excuse or a way to get around a harmful situation. Like, this is not saying you should accept abuse or something harmful, but if you're just feeling kind of down about singleness, thinking and feeling that resistance, stop and saying to yourself, I notice I'm feeling frustration about this. things are exactly how they are right now. And that is a place to just kind of tone down the anxiety, right? And then be like, okay, I'm a little bit more grounded. Now I'm going to move forward. And that is not something that's a one-time process. It is a continual exercise and practice. It helps you move forward with confidence and ease. And then from there, it's a lot about noticing the good in your life. And I don't mean like a toxic positivity of like, everything's great, I should just be happy. It's really about this other technique that I love called ABCs. It's accumulating positives, building mastery, and coping ahead. And they're kind of tools that help build up your positive reserves. So when bad feelings happen, you can feel a bit more like you have mastery over that. So accumulating positives, I jokingly call it the little treat theory. Basically, you know, thinking about, okay, how can I make sure every day I am making sure that something positive happens in my life? Maybe it's, and you can get really simple and like non-materialistic, right? You can be like, I got outside this morning on a cold morning and I got to see the sun. I got to take a walk. I got to pet my dog, noticing the positive things. Or it could be like, yeah, I deserve like a little coffee or a latte or whatever. Like it can be something, you know, material as well. And then the building mastery is kind of similar, but it's more about feeling like you accomplished something. So, and that could be as simple as I paid this bill on time. I always forget to pay this bill on time. I did that. I crossed that off my to-do list. I picked up my dry cleaning when I didn't want to. Or I, you know, went to soccer practice and I made a goal or whatever, like on my rec team. And because those feelings feel good. So like, remember that. And then coping ahead is a little different in that it's helping you kind of future cast and think about those times when maybe you are going to feel upset, right? And you're not necessarily coming up with like template language for yourself. You're like, I'm going to say this exact thing. I feel like that can lead you down the rumination path.
Yeah.
And like enacting, you're like, no, throw out that script. I'm going to say this instead. This will really get them. And coping ahead is more just imagining yourself in a circumstance. So like, let's say being at a party and you're the only single person there and you know it's going to bother you because this one friend is always getting in your case about dating. Coping ahead is just thinking to yourself, how would I be in that scenario? Like, it's almost like a silent movie, I think is the way to think of it. It's like kind of just seeing yourself, imagining yourself like really handling it well, doing well, saying the right thing if you don't think of the exact words. And it's just kind of like a mental rehearsal to give you that like confidence that you would do well in that situation. So in terms of like starting to kind of accept where you are and thinking about like, okay, how can I kind of come down to reality a little bit more with my single life? And maybe a partner happens, maybe doesn't. Again, it's like practicing radical acceptance, accumulating positives, building mastery, coping ahead. All these little tools are nice because they are kind of interchangeable and you can kind of just come to them as needed. But again, it helps build up those positive reserves for when you feel not as good. You'll be a little bit more prepared.
I love that. And I think I haven't talked about this on the show in a long time, but I have a group of friends of mine, right when COVID started, we started a gratitude text, mm-hmm. group text.
Amazing.
We were just talking about, we're like, we've been doing this for almost 5 years. It's so crazy. But
oh my God, I love it.
We do it like, and not everyone's perfect, probably average like 4 or 5 times a week, but we send 5 things we're grateful for every day. It's great for us. And it's like a great way to build connection because I'm always pretty current about what's going on in their life. And if something pops up, we like sidebar about it. But it's so nice in the days that I'm having a really hard day, like you said, having those positive reserves. I've practiced writing that gratitude list enough times that no matter what, I can think of 5 things, even if I'm having a hard day, because it's like I've built that muscle up of being mm-hmm. able to pull that. Then as you go through the day, something happens, you're like, oh, I'm going to put that on my list, you know? So you're mm-hmm. kind of more looking out for the positive things.
I mean, happiness is not a destination, right? There are these like moments that can like somehow like slip through our fingers so quickly. So anything you can do to like capture them and be like, I'm seeing this, I'm savoring it. That's another like resilience technique from research, is like savoring a positive thing as well is like very good for you. It builds up your resilience reserves. I think that's awesome. And then I also think I would encourage people also to like think of like really specific things that aren't always just like, I'm healthy, I have a house. Like these are good things, but like you can kind of get into a rut. And so sometimes, I don't know, I'll be like, I love the way like my little dog like goes up to other little dogs and they touch noses on the sidewalk, you know, like very specific, because you start to see kind of like the beauty all around you. Or like, I don't know, I'm like a sucker for how light goes through a tree in a park, you know, like it's really basic, but it makes you feel good.
Yeah. And
talking about enjoying your own company, like practically, what mm-hmm. are some, let's say someone's listening who they've just always been in a relationship and they're kind of on the first, like they're an adult, but this is the first time they're on their own. How does someone start doing things on their own and feeling okay about it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I would say, remember that you did things on your own, even in a relationship, and you had no problems doing that, right? The thing that has changed is a social perception. So there's research to show that we're more interested in going to a movie alone on a kind of quieter night that's not like a weekend night, right? We'd rather save that for socializing and being out. So like it's the perception of being out by yourself that is the thing that hangs up people. But I remind people that you do errands by yourself all the time, mm-hmm. probably, I'm guessing, or a lot of the time. You probably commute to work by yourself. There's so many things that you already have done by yourself. So you already know how to do this in a lot of ways. And then from there, like the kind of idea of like maybe you're living alone for the first time or just spending more time on your own. I would say I like to think of solitude and like styles. I think that's a more approachable way instead of just being like, because I think people just think, what do I do with all this alone time? If you are really struggling, I stole the Pomodoro method, which is a great technique for studying, where you set a timer for 20, 25 minutes, do something absorbing, and then you take a break for 5 minutes. And that's just to help build up your reserve. So it's like for me, like whenever I had to write and I was like, I really don't want to write, I would be like, okay, I can do it for 20 minutes though, right? Like, yeah. And then the idea is that you find the flow enough that you don't really want to take the break. You're like, oh, I just got started though. Like I'm ready, you know, I'm into it. And I recommend too, for people in those moments, finding something really absorbing, like something to do with your hands, like gardening, cooking, baking, embroidering. Just something where you are really using all of your senses in a way, or most of your senses, so that it's just, it's harder to put down or break away from. And then from there, I think about like, you know, giving yourself a project, right? Like in the pandemic, I was like, I really missed going to the movies. I love movie theaters. And so I was like, well, there's definitely no shortage of movies to watch. But I started to think about, okay, I'm going to watch like trilogies. Like that's going to be my big thing this winter. So I watched like the Matrix trilogy. I watched like Back to the Future. I watched the Before trilogy. I just did the whole kind of series because it felt like I had purpose. It had like a structure. I could talk to my friends, like, I'm doing this thing. What do you think about it? So like it then, my solitude then also provided connection also as something to talk about. Creative projects obviously are excellent kind of solitude activity. And, you know, thinking about, okay, like I have maybe like setting a goal for yourself as well, right? Taking yourself on artist dates, which is a concept from The Artist's Way about just getting new input and like finding novelty, I think is also a nice way to spend alone time, like deliberately seeking out something new for yourself, because then again, you have a way to either find something within you that you didn't realize, or it inspires you, or you have something to talk about with a friend. And then, you know, lastly, I think that you can also think about your alone time again as a way to connect with others still. And I know that sounds kind of paradox, but maybe it's like making birthday cards that you can have in a reserve, right? Like you're a painter, you can make birthday cards, or you can bake something for a friend that you know is going through a hard time. Like, or I'm a huge fan of like loving kindness meditation, which is all about giving yourself self-compassion, but then sending out compassion to others. And so I think there's so many different ways you can kind of put a box around solitude that kind of eases that transition of like, oh my God, I'm all alone now to, okay, now I have these projects. I have ideas about how to use this time.
Yeah, I really like that. And I'm thinking too of just thinking like going to an event. When you go with someone, most of the time you're not as open to meeting new people. Like you're not going to like fully get something out of that. But if you are approaching things like, all right, I'm here, I'm comfortable being here. And I just feel like you're so much more likely to connect with people when you are, quote unquote, like doing it on your own.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of having projects, because I think that people think that relationships are like the most interesting part of someone's life, where if you're at something, it's like, oh, well, we just did this and we just did this. In reality, and I think you could talk to a lot of people who are in, you know, long-term marriages, like most of the time, like one of the least interesting things about them, you know, but like being able to talk to someone who's working through a project or doing something on their house, or that's like the interesting things to talk to about people. It's not like oh, what'd you guys do this weekend? Or like, how was this? So I like that approach a lot of, it doesn't have to be like, okay, I'm going to take myself out to dinner. It's more, I'm just going to learn how to,
right,
you know, exist on my own at home.
Yeah. And I think that's a valuable skill for everybody, right? Like you said, like even people in relationships, they have projects and hobbies and things like that. And so it's just a way to enrich your life, right? Like I feel like sometimes singleness can feel like a waiting room where you're just kind of waiting to do a lot of stuff. And so, but you actually have like this gift of time and space and choice and flexibility that not everyone always gets. And so it's a real special time. And that was something that was really important to me. I remember thinking to myself like, oh, this is a really special time in my life. And I'm like, kind of, I don't want to say squandering it, but by being upset, because, you know, you're allowed to be upset. Like things are upsetting. You're allowed to be frustrated, but I was like, oh, I am in a really special time in my life and I should think about it more that way.
I think most people realize it's a special time in their life after it's over.
Right. Right.
For sure. Yeah. Like I think most people are like, oh, that was a really fun time. But I spent most of it feeling like, yeah, I was in a waiting room waiting to have my number called to find a partner. The last thing that I wanted to touch on and that building connection, you talk about this idea of being a starter in like friend groups or whatever. And I think that's really important. I get a lot of questions from people about like how to make more friends, how to have a better support group. And being a starter in my friend group was like such a big game changer for me. Of used to think like, well, if people want to hang out with me, then they're going to make plans or they're going to set something up and I should just be invited because people think I'm important or cool or worthy, whatever. And it wasn't until it's like, oh no, I'm going to start. I'm going to put together a dinner plan or I want to put together this. And that's been like the most fulfilling and connective times of my life of when I am the starter and I'm not thinking that if people like me, they'll reach out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad that you made that change for yourself and saw the fruits of that to bear. And I think I know it sounds so simple. And it was an idea that came to me from Marissa Franco, who's a researcher.
Oh, yeah. We had her on the show.
Writer. Yes. Who wrote Platonic. She's amazing. And she gave me this idea. And I was like, God, it's so simple, but it's so true. Because oftentimes, yeah, people are just kind of waiting around for the invitation, but no one's actually doing the inviting. And I've never gotten an invitation and thought, ew, why did they invite me? You know, like...
It's always feels so good.
Yeah, yeah. You feel honored. You feel touched. And so remembering how you feel in those situations, even if let's say you're overbooked, you probably can't go or whatever. Remember how you feel like just to be included. That's how they're going to feel too likely, right? And it doesn't mean that you all of a sudden you're going to have this beautiful, long, deep friendship, but it shows like you feel connected. Like I saw a coworker at the office the other day and she was like, you know, like we see each other in the hallways and you know, we say hi a lot and we connected both over having like these kind of like work sabbaticals for a little bit. And she was like, you know, I would love to actually get to know you better. Like she was just like really blunt about it. And I was like, that's very sweet. Like you feel good about that. And so the other kind of like hidden, I would say like slightly devious thing about being the starter is that you get to do things that you like. Yeah. Right? You get to, like, if you love cooking, guess what? You get to throw that dinner party. If you want to make sure everyone goes see that movie, you get to see the movie you picked, right? Like, it's kind of this beautiful thing where you're building community, but you're also just doing things you like to do and seeing the people who also like to do those activities, right? Yeah. And then you're also kind of creating a diversity of connection. You know, I have friends who I'm like, yes, we can get down on tarot and do readings and do that. And other friends who are like, I'm good. I'm probably never going to do that. Right. But I will talk to you about Housewives and Bravo till the, you know, the cows come home. So yeah, you just start to see who's available for what type of experiences. And yeah, it just feels good to feel included. And then to give that to someone as well, that invite, it's like the basis of community. It's just including people.
Yeah. And realizing like almost, I don't think there are very few people in the world that are like, I'm done. I don't need any more friends. Like almost everyone is so, would be like so happy to make a new friend and have someone like initiate that on them. And I always try to remind people of that when they're going through breakups and they feel like, oh, I'm the only single friend in my group and I want to expand it. And it's like, I do believe 100% that people who are single and people that are married like can have very fulfilling friendships. But I also understand like it's nice to have people that are more on your wavelength and like more in your season of life.
Yeah. And like making those invitations more regularly, you will quickly see who is available to be in that season of life with you, right? Like, it does, maybe the friend who just had like a newborn, like maybe in a few months you can come over and bring dinner and, like, you know, whatever it might, but you will quickly see like who is ready to like hang, right? Very quickly. Yeah. So it's a very quick feedback loop.
Yes, that is such a good point. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. I feel very passionate about this topic, not just for people that are going through breakups or that are single, but honestly for people who are in relationships, just because I've seen for myself like how much more fulfilling a relationship is when you feel good on your own. And I really think everyone should experience like being happy on their own. I think it's like such a gift that you can give to yourself and to all your future friendships and really, like, it's not just about, you know, finding that person. So I'm so glad you wrote this book, and I hope everyone goes out and gets it. And can you share a little bit where people can connect more with you?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram, Dame Kane. Kane is spelled K-E-A-N-E. And then my website, if you want to find places to buy the book or see other podcast appearances or writing that I've done, at MeganVKane.com. And then NPR's Life Kit podcast that I run. We do have episodes 3 days a week on parenting, mental health, health, you know, money, all of the above and more. So you can check that podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Megan, and everyone go out and get Party of One. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.